Tim Brando is a college football play-by-play man analyst for Fox Sports. Had a big weekend, lots to get to on college football. Let's make him the giant interview.
Now, it's the giant interview, presented by King of Clean, with electrostatic cleaning, pressure washing, and much more for Memphis and the Mid-South. The King of Clean giant interview on 92.9's Jason and John show.
Tim, how's it going, man? Appreciate the time.
Jason, John, good to be with both of you today.
Yeah, we always love having you on, absolutely. So before we get to the national scene in college football, Tim, are you familiar with what is happening with Memphis football, the latest?
I heard about it as I was making my drive out, an 11-hour drive from Lawrence back home to the Chateau yesterday. I decided to forego the airport whenever possible during COVID-19. My wife took the trip with me. It's a pretty easy four-lane highway drive all the way through. You just keep going through Oklahoma all the way into Topeka and follow through to Lawrence. So I heard a little bit about it late in the night on Saturday and into yesterday. But if you're saying within the last few hours or since this morning, no, I haven't heard anything new. You can enlighten me.
Yeah, so here's the latest. So the initial report by the commercial appeal here was that there was a quote-unquote party bus that the players that certain players got on after the win against Arkansas State, and that sort of was tied to the outbreak. And the University of Memphis did confirm that there is a significant number of positive cases in the program. However, today, Ryan Silverfield, the head coach, publicly came out and refuted that and said it was not a party bus, but it was an extended van with a couple of players got on with family members that drove in from out of town. How important is that distinction in your mind, party bus versus extended van with family?
I think it's worthwhile. Yeah, I think a lot of times, especially now during the COVID era, we had a similar situation that we had to tackle, by the way, with Kansas, where they had reported prior to the game this past week that there was a cluster within their program involving 14 or more of their own health department people. Kansas's HD, their health department, reported that. And in truth, it was 11 program members, but only three players. Well, when you hear 14 in a cluster and no one specifies whether it's players versus trainers versus equipment people, you can see how that can blur the storyline to certain extents. And I think this sounds like blurred storylines, not necessarily the same kind of blurred storyline, but it happens. Look, we had no fans at the game in Lawrence the other night. Yet when Spencer Tillman and I were walking down from our hotel with our masks on, 3 hours before the game, we passed by, I can't tell you how many fraternity houses where the Patron was flowing.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And people were side by side with no masks on. Now, the state of Kansas was allowing for 40% capacity. Kansas State earlier in the day played Arkansas State, and I'm sure you saw they had plenty of fans there.
Yep.
But in Lawrence, they didn't have any. So the school made that determination, not the health department in the local areas. So it's up to the schools to determine which way they want to go. But I think a lot of times, and colleges are finding this out now through public information, you also have to be mindful of HIPAA because everyone takes that seriously now with regard to the protection of information regarding health of any student, and particularly those that play. But, the public information and sports information that's being disseminated to the media can get screwed up pretty quickly. And I don't know about you guys, but whether it's watching the Big Ten story unfold on Twitter or some of these COVID stories unfold on Twitter, it's almost as if, and listen, I engage. I've made my fair share of mistakes using social media. But you can really make a case now that whether it's following a news story like these that you're talking about or one relative to the Big Ten, where you're looking for information coming from this or that anonymous source, we could say what Les Miles used to say about LSU, Tiger Stadium, where teams' dreams come to die. You can make the case that now great journalists, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalists, go to Twitter to see their journalism die. It's really sad. You know, when you're trying to get everything into 140 characters, it can really be a sham. And I think we see that over and over again. I certainly hope that everyone in and around the Memphis program is okay and that they can get back up and going again.
That's the main thing.
The control of COVID is something that I think we've found out through the start of the college football season we can handle. College football can be played, and it can be played safely during the COVID era.
You're exactly right, Tim. Like, this is these are unprecedented times, and therefore, like, how a certain school handles a story is, like, way, way, way down the list. But, you know, there was a 72-hour window, right, from Friday to, you know, I guess today, where Memphis football is probably getting killed across the country. Like, really, a party bus in the middle of a pandemic? Like, what's happening at that program?
Yeah.
Could that have been avoided by Memphis getting in front of – and again, I know you got HIPAA and you got a whole bunch of things, but should Memphis have, before that even became a thing, should they have released a statement sort of on their own volition?
Well, I think that's what everybody's having to learn. And I'm not going to point a bigger finger at Memphis than any other school.
Right.
I think but that's what they're having to learn. Look at it this way, all right? I think we can safely say that the Big Ten hasn't gotten out in front of its own story with regard to starting football back up, have they?
Yeah.
They really haven't. this anonymous source, that anonymous source, depending upon which writer with whatever website that's out there that's available on Twitter, has something new to say about every 30 minutes. Well, the same is true, I think, and the responsibility does fall with regard to those programs in controlling their own messaging. And it's harder to do now because of what media has become. Okay, it's not just the commercial appeal, the local radio stations and television stations in Memphis. I'm familiar with that area. I've done, through my years, if you go back and look through my four decades of doing this, I spent a lot of time in Memphis, did a lot of Memphis basketball games years and years ago. But now you have websites. A lot of these websites are, rah-rah websites for the schools. Regardless of what particular site it might be, it could be Rivals, could be SB, it could be, you name the site. It's harder to do, but I think with regard to the coaches and the trust level that they have with their sports information people and with sports information to the university's information location, they have to coordinate their own messaging to get everything out. And if you wonder sometimes why coaches are consistently telling legitimate sports media that they have no access anymore, that you can't come to practice, you can't bring any photographers with you, no moving video. It's these kinds of stories that are the reason why. You know, everyone gets scared. They shut everything off. They just shut it down. So it's really unfortunate. But that boat has sailed. I don't know. I wish I had an answer for you with regard to how we can get better control of it. But I just think we're sort of living in the wild, wild west of social media overtaking legitimate media, or at least the kind of media that we trusted for so many years.
You mentioned being in Lawrence. How shocked were you by what you saw? Coastal Carolina beating Kansas for a second straight year, and more, Tim, like the way it was this year, right? I think last year was 12-7, close game, relatively close. Coastal Carolina came right out and rolled. What'd you think of what you saw them beating Kansas? One of three Big 12s to go down.
As Spencer and I were preparing for the game just during the week, it looked to us and looked at film, of Coastal Carolina's most recent game at the end of last year and Kansas's game at the end of last year. And by the way, this is a Kansas team that went on the road to Texas 3 weeks later and almost beat the Horns in Austin. Okay?
Yeah.
They lost 12-7 to Coastal Carolina. As a matter of fact, their next game, they went up to Boston College.
That's right.
And blew them out and got their first FBS road win in over a decade, okay, since Mark Mangino was coach. So that tells you something about the top line talent at the Group of Five level. I already tweeted this out this morning, so you may have already seen it. And I'll also give you a scoop. I'm about to put my second top 10 out. You know, I had Iowa State as my national sleeper this year. I thought Iowa State was good enough to be ranked sixth in the country. Brock Purdy is an incredible returning quarterback. Chase Allen's a great wide receiver. Louisiana, the Raging Cajuns had better personnel on both sides of the ball. Sure. Now, they used two kickoff returns as the key, a punt return and a kickoff return, to really extend themselves and win the football game. But Louisiana had better personnel in their top-tier talent. Coastal Carolina, I thought, physically owned the line of scrimmage. Mm-hmm. And Spencer felt the same way coming in. So to answer your question, no, we weren't stunned that Coastal Carolina controlled the game. We were surprised that they could not make the necessary adjustments until after halftime to deal with what Coastal was doing. They did make a little bit of a charge in the third quarter, but you saw the Chanticleers control the game again in the fourth quarter. Listen, all these Group of Five schools, and I know Memphis and a lot of the schools in the American don't like being lumped into that group, but right now they are. What the only difference between the Group of Five and the Power Five is the second and third line players. So when you get into mid-season and you've got injuries and you get down into that depth chart a little bit, it hurts those schools at that level much more so than it does SEC, Big 12, ACC, and Big 10 schools. I mean, that's really the only difference. That and the fact that, again, I go back to the national media, because of the playoff and because the only thing anyone seems to care about is who are the top four. Mm-hmm. Every stinking week, all we care about is who the top four is. Not enough credit is given to those that go in and vanquish another. So you wake up this morning and what do you hear? All these bloviators doing talk television are telling us how the Big 12 sucks. Well, how about how good the Sun Belt is? How about how good the American is? How about how good Conference USA could be? All right, no one wants to cover them because they're too damn lazy to cover them. If you had looked more closely, you might have noticed that Louisiana won 11 damn games last year.
Oh, good.
Okay,
yep.
That they've got a good quarterback. And, oh, by the way, the speed that they have on the edge is good enough to beat an Iowa State on the road. That's part of the problem that we have in college football right now. And until we expand this college football playoff to eight teams, we're not going to have the media paying attention to the Group of Five because it's going to be the same quartet every year. Clemson, Alabama, Ohio State, add another SEC team, Georgia, maybe LSU, could be Florida, maybe Oklahoma, is Texas back? You know, I'm so sick of hearing, is Texas back? Every stinking year we hear, is Texas back? I'm going to see Texas in a couple of weeks. But you know what? Until they string together successive wins, going all the way back to when they beat Notre Dame, what was it, 4 years ago? Texas is back. No, Notre Dame had a losing season, and so did Texas. So it's just become all too typical, stereotypical, really, the coverage of college football. I think it's an embarrassment. And until we expand the college football playoff, I don't think a lazy media is going to be concerned with ever covering it in its totality.
Yep, I think you're right. We're talking to Tim Brando of Fox Sports. Always love having him on the show here on Jason and John. Just sort of your opinion, and if maybe you can't weigh in, certainly understand that. But, Tim, are you expecting there to be a vote by the Big Ten to play football starting in October? I mean, there's like a vote, and then there's going to be a vote to take a vote. And then a vote to take a vote to take a vote. But are you at this point sort of personally expecting to see Big Ten football in October?
All right. Well, October, I'm not going to go down that road. Sorry.
Yeah.
That speculation that's been out there. Look, I full disclosure, I work for a company that is invested in the Big Ten Conference, and obviously they are more in touch with the Big Ten than any, and I don't know anything because that's at a pay grade higher than mine. I do know this, the opinions that I gave to start this season as it related to college football being able to be played are still intact. For years, for decades, I've been saying college football needs universal leadership. And I don't know what more we need to prove my point than what happened these last 6 months. For 4.5 of those months, I was talking to athletic directors, talking to conference commissioners, all of whom were telling me how collegial their conversations were, how they were sharing information, how there were weekly Zoom calls, okay? And yet when it came time on the calendar to make a choice, every one of them went in a different direction, okay? First, the Big Ten and Pac-12 opted out. Big Ten opted for a regular season with only Big Ten teams playing. Then 6 days later, they decided, you know what, we're not playing. Pac-12 followed them. Then we see the ACC say, well, we're going to play one non-conference game, and obviously they wanted to protect the crossover rivalries with the SEC with the hope that that would happen. And the SEC, who we thought had as good a relationship with the ACC as any other conference, said, you know what, no, we're just going to play our conference games and we'll start a week later than you. And then the Big 12 said, well, you know what, we've got games scheduled on September 5th. We'll have some open dates in between, have a little wiggle room in case of a COVID breakout, and we'll begin when we begin. So everyone went in a different direction. Every league has its own epidemiologist, okay? Every league. And yet 10 FBS schools, 10 FBS conferences, all right, five group of fives, five power fives, and they can't agree on an epidemiologist. Every one of them's got a different one. How does that happen? How can you not have specific medical protocols for all 10 FBS Division I conferences? How? And at the very least, in the Power Five, because you're in a consortium together to have a college football playoff, I mean, you're partners. You're in partnership. How can you not have a single set of rules and guidelines followed by all five leagues? That's not even in place. So, you know, we need a czar for college football. We've been needing it. And this year, what's happened with, I mean, it may have taken an international pandemic to prove my point, but it's there. We need someone to coordinate. And I'm not talking about stripping power from any conference commissioners. I'm not. I'm saying let's just have someone that can coordinate with all of the other commissioners so that we can do the same thing or something remotely similar, even though what's affecting you in your part of the country may be different than how it's affecting people in other parts of the country. We can get past some of these problems if we do something along those lines. The Big Ten is in a difficult spot, and I think they understand that now. Kevin Warren took over for Jim Delaney, who was the most powerful man in intercollegiate athletics, short of the late Mike Slive. And when Kevin came in with his NFL pedigree and his law degree, I think he did not understand the layers of bureaucracy to some extent of the college game. And I think that's maybe what we're finding out as time rolls on. The decision was made very early, and I think that was the issue. If the schools are concerned about the health and well-being, I think they all were. Everybody's concerned about the health and well-being of every student athlete. We got that response over and over again from everyone we talked to. And I get that. I think that's genuine. I absolutely do. But college football is also a business, a very big business, and one that these institutions need. So as this thing is developed from last week into this week, and we hear about this particular meeting and the medical task force that's been assigned, now feeling optimistic, and now moving and pushing this forward. If all this is true, then I think there's a very good chance that we may see in this calendar year college football from the Big Ten. But as it relates to as soon as October, fellas, I'm not taking the bait. I'm not going there. We'll see when it happens. You know, I sincerely hope that for all of college football, I hope that we can at some point see that it can be played in parts of the country where these young men believe that they have been put in a very difficult situation, and they have. They followed all the rules, followed all the protocols. There was never any talk of what happened at Nebraska or Ohio State, never any controversies there. And a guy like Justin Fields, think about it, Justin Fields has been more responsible, more accountable than just about any adult in this whole matter. He's got more to lose by playing than he does by not playing. I mean, if he doesn't play, he's still going to probably be the first or second quarterback taken in the draft. Yet he wants to play. He's leading the charge to play. A lot of times I think you see these things play out and you look in the mirror and you say, you know what, I think it's the young people that have this right, and the adults have to look at themselves in the mirror and wonder, what the hell happened to me?
Tim, I got to tell you, I'm guessing you probably didn't expect this to happen today, but Julie, who was listening to us, has tweeted in, and she has let us know that she thinks she's fallen in love with you, and that she loves your viewpoints. Should I tell her that you're spoken for? Would you like me to just pass that along?
Yeah, you know, I appreciate that. I've always gotten along well with girls. I've got nothing but girls in my family.
There you go.
I have two lovely daughters. One is 37. The other is 30. Three grandkids. Two of them daughters. One grandson. And my wife Terry of 41 years made the trip to Lawrence and back with me. It's all Team Brando here. But the house here at Chateau Brando is pink, lavender, dusty rose, and mauve. So I've been in the pink for a long, long time here.
Yeah, you're outnumbered down there, man. You are absolutely outnumbered. Tim, we appreciate the time,
appreciate your time, sir.
I tell Julie, I'll tell her sometime in the future what I always say to my wife, yes, dear.
There you go. Thanks, Tim. Appreciate it, man. He is Tim Brando, Fox Sports play-by-play man. We're just, you know, we're making things happen here. Making things happen here on the Jason and John Show, but I believe Julie is also
she's spoken for as well. That should probably be said. Yes,
exactly.